Hello and welcome to episode one of Hysteria, a new podcast from Crooked Media. I'm your host, Erin Ryan. As you listen, you might notice that I'm a woman. You might further notice that none of the voices you hear on this podcast belong to men. That is on purpose. Podcasting seems a little dude-heavy, and while I love dudes as much as the next person, Hysteria is designed to be a space where women, and anybody who doesn't identify as a man, talk to each other. Second, this episode of Hysteria is going to be a little different from a typical episode. I'm joined by all six of my co-hosts, both from the East and West Coasts, so you can get to know all of them. In the future, you'll typically hear from two or three of them at once. There was also some breaking news on Wednesday that came after we'd already recorded most of the show, but because we're devoted to giving you the best goddamn podcast we possibly can, we called the gang back together to weigh in on the huge announcement that Supreme Court Justice Anthony Kennedy is retiring, effectively throwing the future of reproductive rights in this country into question. After we tackle that, you'll hear a deep dive into use of the C word from the Los Angeles crew, as well as the Week in Sorry from New York, ending on a high note with cultural recommendations from LA in a segment called I'll Have What She's Having. There's a lot to talk about, but first, the good news.
My name is Blair Imani. I'm an author and activist, and the hill that I will die on is that the first season of Pokemon is based entirely on psychological theory. More tweets on that later, but it's true.
Nice. Hi, I'm Ziwei Fumido. I am a comedian, and the hill that I want to die on is that The Jetsons features a world after a black genocide. There are no brown characters in that show. Why is that? Think about it, George Jetson.
Oh, but Elroy was so cute.
I'm just saying he is a white supremacist.
Hi, I'm Alyssa Mastromonaco. I'm an enthusiast. And the hill I would die on is that Stevie Nicks is definitely a witch, and I want to be part of her coven.
No, I agree. I agree with all of these things.
I do too. I mean, I'm sad about the Jetsons, but I agree with you.
It. Okay. All right, Hysteria New York, episode one. Guys, I am so happy that we're finally doing this. Yesterday was a pretty rough day. This week has been a pretty rough week. But there has been some good news. Mm. So let's start.
Has there been?
Well, there's good news. This morning I woke up and this is what allowed me to get out of bed. I was watching videos of this over and over. Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez, a 28-year-old activist, has upset the number four Democrat in the House in a primary challenge that she issued from the left. Her opponent was a 10-termer who had outraised her 10-1. Mm. She's 28. She could be, I think, the youngest woman ever.
She will be, yeah.
Her rap name, according to AP, is Young Challenger, because all of these giant news outlets refuse to use her name. So I'm just kind of like Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez, aka Young Challenger, in the building.
YC.
Where my socialists at?
She's a really compelling speaker. I didn't know a ton about her before. That she was running. And she's really interesting. And her platform was very clear and confidently left, which is really fascinating. Very, very much along the lines of what Cynthia Nixon is running for governor on in New York. So I think it's going to be a real interesting election.
The white men were lamenting.
Shook.
Oh, the white Democrats in Congress were like, we have a real leadership crisis now in the House. Well, whose fault is that?
Exactly. I think it's
I was going to say the only leadership crisis is that they don't know what the base is about.
Like, totally.
Democratic voters over and over again are showing that we're more left-leaning, that we're not leaving anybody behind in terms of like social equality. And the Democrats in leadership are like, what do they want? And it's like, these things.
We're totally telling you. Yeah. We're telling you what we want.
Exactly. It's a testament to the fact that anybody can get fired.
Yeah.
Sorry.
That's anyone true. Can get fired, and the hustle matters.
Exactly.
I will say, though, that Crowley was a class act in,
totally.
In conceding to her. He said he would support her in the general. And he also had a band, and he played Born to Run and dedicated it to her. And it was a very sweet moment.
Dad. Oh,
yeah.
It did. It reminded me a bit of when John McCain conceded to Barack Obama. More like emotional and heartfelt, but it's like, oh, it like made me think even more of him.
Mm. Yeah. It was a classy move by Crowley, and oh my gosh, I think that Andrew Cuomo and other kind of establishment
should
Democrats,
be shitting a brick.
I can't wait. Yeah.
The thing though that Linda. I was pissed off about was that Miss Nancy over in California was like just like was the win of Alexandria was like just a footnote in her very long speech or, you know, written statement about the men who lost.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, because
it's a name I will not use.
Totally. Well, it's a testament to the fact that she can too be pushed out. And she's, I'm sure she's afraid.
I mean,
why wouldn't you be?
She could be pushed out of leadership. I mean, but you know,
absolutely.
We're getting a little bit ahead of ourselves. I think the first thing that, the thing is most important that we learned this mm-hmm. week, and we're going to get a little bit more into it as we kind of dive into the less happy news, is that it's really important to vote.
Definitely.
Voting matters because we're really behind the eight ball in a lot of different areas. Mm-hmm. So let's get started on the news dive. This is actually the second recording session that the New York City Hysteria crew has had today because the first one was Wednesday morning. And we had this really bomb-ass conversation, and it lasted like an hour and a half, and it was just wonderful. And then we all went home and got on with our lives, and I took a nap, and I was awoken from my nap by a ding of my phone, which was a text from my co-host, Alyssa Mastromonaco. And the text was, "This is apocalyptic."
OMG, no. OMG.
OMG, this is apocalyptic. And I think I responded, fuck.
Yeah.
Fuck.
What do we do?
Fuck. What do we do? What do we do?
But interestingly, what you had said during the first podcast that will probably get edited out of this, you know, final cut is, fuck that guy, fuck Kennedy.
Yeah.
But you said it ahead of time, and that's why I think you are a witch.
So Anthony Kennedy, Supreme Court Justice, announced today, the last day of the term that he is, or this session, that he is retiring.
And a little bitch.
And he sucks. It was a real stab to women.
It was a real bitch move.
To women's rights. It's upsetting for a number of reasons. And I think that if you're listening to this podcast, you probably know that Kennedy was, in a lot of cases, the swing vote. This is also the two-year anniversary of a case in which Burwell versus Texas?
Yeah.
Where the state of Texas actually lost in the Supreme Court in an abortion rights case. And it was considered at the time a big win for abortion rights advocates. And now on the two-year anniversary, Kennedy is throwing his withered old middle finger up in the air at that. I was really, really upset because this means that like Donald Trump and his little follow around boy, Mike Pence, are going to be able to.
Slapdog.
This is worst case scenario.
This is worst case scenario that they. It looks like
one of them.
There's going to be another Supreme Court vacancy, and it's possible that Donald Trump could fill it before the election, which is when theoretically the Democrats take back the House and possibly the Senate if we do our shit right. I was upset about this because this is very important to me, and I was texting with a male friend who I didn't.
A mistake already.
Yeah, a male friend. What's that? No, but
he was they're antonyms,
right? They don't go together.
Oxymoron.
Yeah. he texted me something he wanted to talk about, a movie or TV show or something, and I just responded, look, Kennedy's retiring. I can't talk to you about this. And he said, well, what's the big deal? And I was like, well, you know, reproductive rights are really in the crosshairs right now. And he said, and this, men, if you're listening, never say this to a woman. He said, you'll be fine.
And let's be clear. He said this to you, a white woman.
I'm a white woman.
So it was not, you'll be fine. It was, you'll be fine.
And, you know, Z-Way, we were kind of chatting about this before. And I think you said something really important. Like, you'll
totally
be fine. What does that mean?
Well, it's exactly what got us in this predicament in the first place. Mm-hmm. White men who don't have to worry about these issues because they'll be fine. And so they're punishing us.
If you have not had your feet in the stirrups, you have no business saying anybody's going to be fine.
Exactly.
Mm-hmm. And I have to say that when I started tweeting about this, because to me, I mean, I when I was texting with Aaron, I was crying. I'm like, wow, this is actually the thing that we thought wouldn't happen. It could happen, but we never thought it would happen. And it's like, so all these men start replying to my tweets. And they're like, don't forget about the men. This is not the time to make it about you.
It's all about the men. That's the reason why we're here. That's the reason why we're in this predicament, because it's all about the men all the time. And I've lost rights for my body because of men.
I mean, Here's the thing, and Blair, you worked with Planned Parenthood. Mm-hmm. Like, I think I'm obviously a very privileged person in that I am a childless woman living in an urban environment with a high level of education, no, you know, I'm a decent income.
I co-sign that.
Right. It's the thing is, it's not it's not about me being fine. It's never been about me being fine. And advocacy, as somebody who's like been an advocate and an activist, like that seems like rule number one.
I mean, totally. I mean, when you go into spaces, you're not going into space simply because, oh, it's inconvenienced you now and you're going to show up now. That's the reason why some people show up, and I won't knock that because that's a lived experience. That's valid. But I think that if you're going around doing your advocacy based solely on what affects you and what doesn't affect you, then you're going to be missing out, and you're really going to be one of those people in history that is remembered for being silent, or who isn't remembered at all because your silence and your complacency allowed so much injustice to happen.
Mm-hmm.
But working at Planned Parenthood, Mary Alice Carter, who was the director of communications at Planned Parenthood, absolutely love Mac. She mentioned that this is a reality for people in Mississippi and for in people in Arkansas,
totally.
People in parts of Tennessee who have been living in a post Roe world forever. Roe really didn't change the thing for them, and so I fought that fought there. I haven't lived that experience. I mean, I lived in Louisiana. But things like getting admitting privileges and things like these ridiculous laws where at an abortion clinic you have to be able to get a gurney through both ways, which means sideways and front ways.
Mm-hmm.
So you have these giant doors which cost extra money and just all of these hoops and, you know, things for people to jump through to be able to get healthcare access. So that's a reality that people are already experiencing. But I think out of all of that, like that depressing reality is that's where your funding should go. It should go to your local abortion clinics.
Mm-hmm.
It should go to Planned Parenthood, and it should go to Planned Parenthood Southeast, like the folks who are fighting these front lines, because it's going to be a cascading effect. Not everyone's going to be affected equally.
Right.
It's really going to be a targeted response, and where you are spending your time, effort, and resources should be on places that are going to be hit the hardest, whether you are affected in those areas or not.
Right.
Totally.
And this isn't like I felt over the last couple weeks, and I think that you probably have felt something similar, that everything shitty in the world is building up in my body like poison. It's like I was in California when the recording of the kids who are separated from their parents came out, and I was in a drugstore and I broke down crying, and I'm not a person who breaks down crying in public, and today was the first time that I felt like all of this was just going to crush me. And I was tempted to remind myself that it would be okay for me, but I almost think it's important for people to lean into it.
Well, here's the thing. If you are an empathetic person, which I know you to be, it's not okay for you. Like, can I get an abortion right now if I need one? For sure. But what about the million women before Roe v. Wade was legal who had to be, you know, Frances from Dirty Dancing and went to New Paltz and helped the friend get an abortion?
Mm-hmm.
Like, that's the thing. I'm not okay because I know what it means for so many other people. And the fact that, you know, just a few weeks ago here in New York, the Physicians for Reproductive Health had their annual thing, their annual event, which, you know, last year I got to meet Dr. Willie Parker, who provides abortions.
If you don't know who he is, look him up. He has super soft hands. I've met him. He's the best.
And there is a reason that event, the location of it is always a secret because they're always in so much danger.
When I was working at Planned Parenthood, part of my job, and forgive me, Cecile et al., for revealing these elements, but I think it's all public now, is I was helping as a press officer below the Mason-Dixon line to keep our newer project secret. So when we were doing a Zika virus grant before we got that public, we were literally just knocking on doors to let people know who are trying to get pregnant or who were pregnant, that, hey, Zika virus is a thing, use a condom even if you're pregnant. And we had to be so discreet about that planning process because it was literally, people would go to our canvassers, the children's schools and harass them at their homes. And this was during the 2016 election in Florida. Like, it was so frightening. And me being a visible Muslim woman, like, I had the luxury of leaving, right? I have the luxury of having Planned Parenthood's great security. Shout out to Oscar. But that's not what everybody has, right? Going into a clinic to just get healthcare, and there are people who have all of these grotesque signs, like, and then not being able to even get the services you need, it's already a struggle. It's already a battleground.
Well, and that's the thing that I felt like about today is that behavior of those people is now somehow sanctioned. You know, that it's not, that it's like, you know, Donald Trump's racism. You know, before, people may have been as racist as they are now, but they at least knew it wasn't chill to like express it.
Right.
And I think it's been people on the fringes who have been the folks who have, you know, like grandma and grandpa asshole who like go to the clinic, like, or this one man in Memphis, Tennessee at a city hall, city council meeting who said that he just didn't want people to have condoms. So he didn't want Planned Parenthood to have a grant. And I was like, dude, you can't even get an erection. Like, it's, be quiet.
You know, it's infuriating.
It is super infuriating. And the thing is, like, the party that is advocating so strongly to restrict women's access to abortion, especially poor women and women of color, those people are not making life easier for mothers. It would be one thing if they were trying
That's their intention.
Yeah, it would be one thing if they were advocating for universal, affordable childcare.
Expansion to WIC. More funding, more health education.
Yep.
Breastfeeding classes. This like is not diapers.
Doula services. Like there was a big big piece in the New York Times recently about black doulas who work in parts of the South where there's a high black maternal mortality rate. We have a
Serena Williams almost died.
We have a shameful maternal mortality rate.
She's a wealthy, like, well-situated black woman who almost died in childbirth because doctors just don't believe black women and our medical system's racist.
Fundamentally, this was never intended to help women, right? I think of it from the perspective of me being like a Nigerian American, and my parents come from Nigeria, like deeply colonized by the British in like 1800.
Shout out to the British.
Shout out to the British. Like, I have centuries of trauma and centuries of stamina with this colonialism and this patriarchy, you know? Mm-hmm. And we can overcome this as we overcame Dred Scott, Plessy versus Ferguson, Roe v. Wade. There are so many times in history where people of color, women have been tested because the institution of the United States is anti us. So we just must
I think that's definitely
persist.
Been the response. I think it's similar to after the election where there's a lot of like, and I'm going to talk a lot about white Twitter and black Twitter the entire time on this podcast, so get excited. But I think that white Twitter is really realizing, oh shit, it's like, you know, like Alyssa was saying, like it's as bad as we thought it could get. It's one of the worst case scenarios. And black Twitter, I've seen a lot of folks saying stuff like Brittany Packman, who's saying, hold on to your joy. Like, we've been through this. It's been worse for us. But also, people have died in those bad times,
definitely.
Right? But I think that, inshallah, as, you know, God willing, in Arabic, I'm not casting a spell, don't worry. I think that God willing, with, like, the allyship and the accompliceship of folks who have been silent to that oppression in the past, there will be less death. But it's going to be a fight. I think this is really a time where people have to figure out how and where and when they're going to put their privilege on the line for people's lives.
And I'm ready to fight because I feel like as the first black woman at my Equinox, I've lived... I've lived luxuries, and I'm not going to let that go for some asshole named Kennedy. He gave Kennedy a bad name, and that's the best fried chicken. So
here's, you know, we're obviously, the thing that I think people are going to want to listen to somebody giving them answers tomorrow or steps that they can take. And the reality is that we don't know what to do right now.
So much so that this afternoon, as soon as this, when we were texting, I emailed Elise Hogue, who is the president of NARAL. And the email said, put me in, coach. I'm like, tell me what we need to do.
I did the same thing for Erica Sacken at Planned Parenthood.
I love Erica.
I will re-enlist in the Federation of Planned Parenthood.
This is it.
But we don't know. That's the thing. No. Like, we don't know what we can do.
But I think that's what we can do is just like offer, if you have time, if you have a couple dollars and you don't know where to put it, ask questions, right? You want to be smart about this. We don't want to just dump a bunch of money into the ACLU and, you know, like local organizations could really benefit more.
There is one thing I believe people can do. Call your fucking governors.
Yeah.
Because you got to call your governors.
Show
because
up to their steakhouses.
If they do not have, if abortion is not protected at the state level and they get flooded with those calls, they will start talking to the senators. And I think that is like the one active thing that we can do.
And it's summertime. Yep. Your kids got time.
Yeah.
Put some little t-shirts on, some pro-choice
redial
shirts. Yeah. Let's go.
I mean, you can call people, but I think it's also fair to take a moment to just feel overwhelmed and sad about this. Because I think that this is something that's overwhelming and sad. And I don't think that you should forget how it feels to be sad in a way that's empathetic for people who are different than you.
Well, and here's the other thing is that we sit there today, I get the breaking news, I'm sitting there doing laundry, and I was like, fuck, the kids at the border. Mm-hmm. Like, there's this is just another layer of things that we have. It's like, okay, so we have like 30% for this and 30% of our attention for this. And the thing that I thought is like, this is literally too much to bear.
Mm-hmm. Like, but there's things that we can let go of. Right. Like fucking Sarah Huckabee Sanders. Gone. Exactly. I don't give a shit about what she does for, like, I didn't in first place. But I think that we really need to think about, like, I mean, we need to be continue to hold her accountable. But we can't talk, no more sad sob stories from this bitch. No more.
Bye.
I think of this administration like the Godfather. Every single time I think it can't get worse, it just keeps pulling me back.
Why does it always go back to Italians?
Because that movie's awesome.
I mean, so like, I guess we probably have to wrap this up because we've got a lot of show to get to today. Show that has been recorded over the last 2 weeks. Show that was recorded without any of us knowing that this would happen. This worst case scenario thing would happen. Mm-hmm. And I can't offer comfort to anybody. All I can say is, like, remember that you're uncomfortable. Remember why you're uncomfortable. Because it's not okay to imagine a future where people are cut off from access to reproductive health care in certain parts of the country, but not others. It's totally not okay. And we need to keep that in mind, like, every single day until we're not in a place where it is fully in danger. And Blair, do you want to add something?
Yeah, I do want to say that if you are a privileged person and you are in that moment of despair, do what the black women always have to do and snap out of it a little, you know? Mm-hmm. Like, we need folks on the front lines. We need folks who have the resources, who have the energy, who have the, like, the ability to get up and go. When the folks of us, the people in our communities who have been told to be strong for so long, mm-hmm. when they really need a moment of vulnerability. Exactly. I don't want to see any pictures going around of white women crying on black women's shoulders.
Do they
I want
do
folks
that?
Hand in hand. Marching to the polls.
Let's post that.
Marching.
I can't cry. I can't. I did my once every 6 months last week when I cried about the kids at the border, but my tear ducts are refilling as we speak. So in a couple months I'll be able to cry on you guys too.
And also, white suburban women who elected Donald Trump, who helped elect Donald Trump.
Totally.
We ain't gotta know who you are.
These are the consequences of the election.
This is what happens. This is what happens. And, you know, the thing about, one more final thought about abortion is that people who are against it have a very cartoonish view of what it is and who's making the decision and why they're making the decision. And the reality is something that ranges from just something that a woman decides it's not time for her to something that is extremely heartbreaking and horrible for her. And this is victimizing women who are already experiencing something in many cases that is traumatic for them.
Yes.
I don't want to live in a country that values that.
No.
I don't. And I don't think we have to. All right. We have to take a break. When we're back, the week in Sorry.
Bettering your business takes working with the best. With the James Hardie Alliance, you gain access to leads, training, networking, and support from the number one brand of siding in North America. Achieve new levels of success by joining the James Hardie Alliance today.
And we're back with The Week in Sorry. This is a segment for you new listeners, and you're all new listeners because this is episode one. women apologize too much. Mm. I am so sorry. I apologize too much as well. But that gives us a unique expertise when it comes to assessing the apologies of others. So The Week in Sorry is the time in the show when we go through people, corporations, celebrities, any kind of public figure that has been forced to say sorry this week or should have said sorry this week, and we determine whether or not they meant it and if they deserve our forgiveness. I think it's really, you know, for all the apologizing we've done, I think we've earned it as women. First, I want to throw to Blair, who's got a story about a woman that we're all calling Permit Patty. So Blair, take away.
You know, not to gloss over her Christian name, which is Allison Ettel, Ettel.
That's like a, come on. Did a writer's room come up with that? They're like, okay, names of women who would call the cops on a black kid trying to sell water.
Ready, go. Susan. No, I'm kidding. So she called the cops on a little black girl who's 8 years old, a young entrepreneur who was selling bottled water in San Francisco, who was causing a quote-unquote disturbance with her entrepreneurship.
She was selling it without a permit. permit, correct?
Who cares? Well, I'll tell you who cared. It was Permit Patty. So there's this video of the young girl's mother recording this woman who's calling the police. And I know in this woman's mind, she has the image of the barbecue Becky in the background. Mm. So she tries to crouch behind a little fence so that she can't
Sean
be seen.
Sean Spicer style.
Yeah. Oh.
It was hilarious. And so she was like, girl, the whole world gonna see you, boo. You can hide all you want. And she did try to hide. And then within hours, Black Twitter was using the hashtag. Not like, I feel like it was within 30 minutes. Like, Black Twitter was using the hashtag Permit Patty. Got her whole... We found out that she sells weed to dogs.
Without a permit.
What?
Yeah. I don't know
if
they even make permits for that.
The dog
weed. She does.
Yeah. And the weird thing is, she's like a mad dog cannabis entrepreneur.
So she's like, one, she benefits from mass incarceration and the war on drugs by being able to be a white entrepreneur who sells weed. Two, she sells it to dogs. Mm-hmm. Three, and then she has the audacity. The caucasity, if you will, to call the police on an eight-year-old Black girl who is selling water and it's hot outside.
Listen, just snorted.
I snorted. I'm sorry. Anyone who knows me knows I thought that shit was funny.
Thank you. Not my joke. It's Black Twitter's joke. Shout out to my writer's room.
Shout out to my writer's room.
That's funny.
But I just thought that was wild.
Did she issue an apology?
I don't care.
She didn't do an apology. She tried to justify herself.
Yes, she did.
So she got on MSNBC, I think it was, and said...
CBS News.
And in full makeup. Full makeup. You don't understand. They were being loud. They were being loud.
Ma'am, you sell loud to dogs.
It was hot out. And so it was loud and it was hot and people had their windows open and I was distressed.
Oh.
But I'm sorry.
That is not helping.
No,
that is not. Like, it's the thing is, oh my God.
Ugh. Also, in this day and age, when do you just not keep on walking?
Yeah.
They are children that come up to your hip. Keep going.
All 8-year-olds are annoying. Have you met an 8-year-old?
Well, joke's on her because those kids got their trip to Disney World.
Haha, scam it. Scam
so it does have a good ending, even though I think we can all agree that I hope Permit Patty learned her lesson and never does it again. But I think that it's impossible, as Blair has said in the past, it's impossible to really gauge whether or not she meant it until we can see how she
until
acts.
She stops calling the police on 8-year-olds and selling dogs weed.
She needs to take some of that weed and chill out. She's wound tight.
She does.
Really. Yeah. Like, if you have all this weed in your house and you're, like, distressed by sounds outside, I think the solution is right in front of you. Like, you could close your window. You could do a little weed. Is that what the kids
say? Yeah, they do it.
Snort some
they
weed.
Just do it. That's Nike.
What? Did we stop using the word toke? When did that happen?
I don't know.
The late 90s.
I don't know. Right around when we stopped saying cast aspersions.
Cast aspersions with my monocle. Oh, you dropped your monocle.
All right. Z-Way, as I understand, has an apology from another person who really, really needed to apologize.
Yes. So this is a classic Real Housewife apology from Roseanne Barr. She apologized because she has lost everything after, obviously, her show got canceled when she compared Valerie Jarrett to Planet of the Apes.
Yeah.
She says that she didn't know that Valerie was Black, as that was part of her apology. I don't buy that at all. She also said that there are Black people in her family and she feels guilty. I would love to see the Black people who are in her family. My theory is that she's referring to the Winslows of Family Matters because I just don't buy it. Sorry. I feel like I personally am owed an apology for having to think about Roseanne in the first place. If she had watched her initial show, she'd know to treat people with kindness. And clearly all of our favorite 90s stars are problematic and we're only a couple days away from watching Danny Tanner become a war criminal. So
everybody's milkshake ducking around here.
Exactly. Leave the 90s in the past, please.
Everybody's milkshake ducking. But you know what's interesting about the Roseanne thing? So, like, obviously she, you know, has some very awful opinions and attitudes and should probably never have been given a reboot of her show in the first place.
No.
Because she seems like a very malignant person. But secondly, you know, they're doing a show, kind of the show, but without her.
Yeah, Connors.
The Connors. How do you think they're going to explain that Roseanne is not there anymore?
I mean, she had to have died. Yeah. There's no other way.
Somebody suggested, I think that they should have like a scene where it's shot as though she's dying. Like maybe she's driving
her Uber.
Yeah, she's driving a car off a cliff while yelling the N-word, but we never hear the end of it. She's just yelling and it's like, oh, then she's dead. Then you don't feel bad about it.
I hope she gets they just replace the wife and never acknowledge it. It's like replaced by like Leah Remini.
I hope that it's like a dark skinned Roseanne.
Yeah. Like dark skinned Viv. Yeah.
I hope that she also just like walks upstairs and like disappears, because like people have been written out in many ways.
Everybody can get cut, everybody can lose their job. We learned that in Congress.
Yeah. It would be funny. It would be funny if they just were like, where'd she go? We haven't seen her in a while. Every once in a while in the show.
Yeah.
Just like never resolved what happened.
Right.
Is she
out?
I was gonna take it to a dark place and say, what if she got deported to Ireland or something?
That would be pretty funny.
You know what? I think
she's a fictional character. We're talking about a fictional character. We're not talking about the real human being, Roseanne. I don't want real human Roseanne
correct.
To drive off a cliff.
No.
I think the fictional character in the show.
Speak for yourself. I wouldn't drive her off a cliff.
Personally, no. I, on the record, I would never, ever wish ill on any racist. But
we got to be civil.
Right? I'm real civil. I civilly wish that you would disappear from my life. Virtually, not in reality.
Right. So do we? So I'm assuming, Z-Way, that you do not accept Roseanne's apology.
I don't. I don't like to waste my breath on this woman. Whatever.
All right, so that's no.
There are other stars from the 90s that we could... Rosie O'Donnell's... Who cares?
Alyssa, you've got a real soul crusher of a story here.
Hello, Walgreens. So earlier this week, Nicole Ortega went to a Walgreens. She is a nice lady who was 10 weeks pregnant, went to the doctor. The fetus had no heartbeat and had stopped developing. So instead of doing a sort of traumatic medical procedure, they said that she could take the miscarriage medicine. So she goes to the Walgreens and tries to pick up her prescription, and the pharmacist in front of her 7-year-old and the 5 people standing behind her says, I disagree with this. I will not fill this prescription. And the 2 pharmacists behind him did not step up. So according to Walgreens policy, this is acceptable, that pharmacists can, on moral grounds, not, you know, fill
their jobs,
fill a prescription. Okay, so first of all, so many things about this. So to get to the end, and then I'll go back to my commentary, Walgreens comes out, she files a complaint, she calls the manager, and the story gets into the Arizona papers. And Walgreens says, we are looking into the matter to ensure our customers' needs are handled. That was their apology. So let's go back first. Fine. If your policy is that the pharmacists can say they will not fill a prescription, can refuse to fill a prescription, here's what the man could have done. He could have seen what her prescription was for. He could have, without saying anything, gone to one of the other 2 pharmacists and say, will you take care of her? Instead, he made a spectacle, okay? And so that is not fucking acceptable.
Totally.
And the other 2 should have filled it. She ended up having to go to another pharmacy that was out of her way to pick up her prescription where there was no issue, and she picked it up there. But that's the problem.
Mm-hmm. Also, let's revisit the fact that this woman was going through a horrible trauma.
Yes. Completely.
A miscarriage. Well,
miscarriages are actually – so I miscarried in November. Miscarriages are very common, so I want to destigmatize that immediately.
Yes,
but the thing is, you can go into sepsis if the fetus doesn't leave your body. So instead, on his moral ground, he's basically forcing this woman to go into sepsis.
Yes.
Which means your body turns toxic and that you can become violently ill. So I think that I totally understand her rationale, and even if there was no rationale of her wanting to do this at home versus going to get a medical procedure. But I've dealt with this in Louisiana, where there's a whole long line of people, like, you know, waiting in line to buy whatever at the pharmacy, and you want to get your birth control, and the pharmacist is sitting there judging you. And it's like, where does the shame and power dynamic come in?
Yep.
Which is what we're talking about here when he's making a spectacle versus it being something of a moral quandary.
Mm-hmm. Totally. I don't want my life to be in the hands of someone who works at Walgreens.
Well, now that I know that they are not even sorry, so they did not really apologize.
No, they didn't.
So nothing is accepted, and I judge them and will avoid Walgreens at all costs.
CBS yeah, so game. Will I. CBS yeah. for life. For life. CBS or Dwayne Reed? Is that
– yeah. No, Dwayne Reed is Walgreens.
Oh, so no, never mind then.
I'm picking up my birth control from there today, and then I'm going to switch it up to a more friendly and ethical – outlet for medication.
Yeah, you know,
medication outlet.
That
pharmacy.
Is an important point. Women have a ton of purchasing power, and I think that, you know, it's hard. Ethical consumption is kind of a fraud.
In capitalism, it
doesn't exist. Yeah. But you can make decisions about where you pick up, where you get your prescriptions filled, and where you just go buy like a 2-liter bottle of LaCroix or whatever. Like, you can choose to not go to places that allow their employees to do this.
But the issue is, there is no moral objection for a man ordering Viagra, right?
Like, if he shows up with like a 18-year-old side piece, his wife is in the car, like, you're not gonna be like, oh, well, I have a moral
question. I would because I don't think men that old should fuck.
Well, now I would.
I'm just kidding.
Oh, I think we're gonna get sued by ageist men's rights activists.
I love 89-year-olds.
I think everybody should have sex when they want with an enthusiastically consenting partner. I'm just kidding about the old men needing Viagra thing, but I do think that that's an important point, because there is legal precedent in America that allows people to issue moral objection to things, but only as they pertain to women's birth control.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Like the Hobby Lobby Supreme Court ruling narrowly applied to bosses being able to only morally object to reproductive care.
Totally.
They're not able to morally object to blood transfusions or other things that certain religions might disapprove of.
I saw that Walgreens story and I was so surprised. I didn't know that you could just say, hey, I'm not going to give you this miscarriage medicine. I didn't know that.
Well, here's the thing. It's the miscarriage medicine is the same medicine that's used for at home, like an abortion, that you can take it early in a pregnancy to terminate
it. Essentially induces a period.
Yeah.
So it's used for other things besides abortion, as we, you know, if you didn't know that already, now you know, because, you know, this is what this woman was getting it for. So this man, I'm sure, thought he was interfering with an abortion, and what a fucking idiot.
Yep.
He should be humiliated.
But that's the thing.
It
really demonstrates that the people who are, you know, calling out these like moral crises, they don't actually care about the people affected. They don't actually care about this woman's life. If he did, he would have asked questions. He would have gotten context. And I really feel that if you care about somebody, if you care about providing the care, you will trust them and their doctor to know what is right for them, and you will act accordingly.
But to him, women aren't valuable, clearly.
Yeah.
He doesn't care if she lives or dies.
One thing, though, I want to add, though, like conscience clauses are a real thing.
Totally.
Like, in a lot of states, and I'm not sure how it applies.
In Louisiana, you can't have an apartment if your landlord decides that you're gay and that they can't, within their conscience, rent to gay people. You can get kicked out.
Yeah,
Same thing with working at a school.
It's really egregious, and it's happening. Like, people need to pay attention to this sort of thing, because conscientious, like, giving people the right to object to provide medical care for people is something that's enshrined in some laws, where it's okay for, like, if you're a woman. I mean, in Ireland, a woman died because they wouldn't perform an abortion on her because of, you know, it was against the law. They wouldn't do it. But there are, you know, there are places in the U.S., like, a lot of hospitals are controlled by the Catholic Church.
Mm-hmm.
And you can go needing an emergency abortion and they can refuse to do it for
you. And you'll just die.
Yeah, and you'll just die. So it's just something that I think women and anybody who cares about women, or anybody who has ever once grown inside a woman's body, which is literally every human.
Literally everyone.
Yeah, yes. Pay attention to this stuff. This matters. This matters because this is just happening. This is happening to this one woman who's making a big deal out of it now. And she made a choice. She made a choice to make a big deal out of it. Mm. I'm sure that there are dozens of women who have been humiliated and decided to remain silent because they didn't want to drag it on further than...
Or didn't have, like, an opportunity to speak up. Like, what happened to me in Louisiana with not being able to get my birth control filled and then, like, having to, like, scramble, like, where do I go?
Yeah.
Maybe it was Walgreens. I don't know. But I didn't have my Twitter platform to drag them on Twitter.
That's
like
a good point.
I didn't have a media contact to reach out to. So it just alarms me to think about how often this is happening to people who don't have a voice or a place to speak up.
Mm-hmm. The line between you and justice shouldn't be going viral. That shouldn't be the only thing that's protecting you and your body.
Yeah.
What a dystopian world.
Yeah. But it's what we have. For now, and we should use it. And if something happens,
and we're going to keep talking about it.
We're going to keep talking about it. And if something happens to you and you're just like an average citizen, something happens and you're like, this feels like a violation, you should reach out to journalists that you trust. They're really easy to get in touch with now. Find them on Twitter. Just go to your local newspaper. They all have tip lines. Like, reach out and make a big fucking deal out of it.
Yeah.
Because it is a big fucking deal, and we will help you make a big fucking deal out of it.
Complaining changed the world.
Yes. All right. Well, that's a week in sorry, guys.
Got to take a break. That was a real fiery one.
Real fiery.
Real fiery.
Guys, can I pee real quick? My bladder's about to burst.
Alyssa.
And we're back.
Hi, everybody. We are in L.A. right now. As you know, this podcast is bi-coastal, which means I have three co-hosts in L.A. and three in New York. You know plenty about me, but I want to take a moment before we get into the rest of the podcast for you to get to know my co-hosts. So they're going to introduce themselves, name, job, and the most trivial thing that they care the most about. So, Megan, why don't you go first?
Hey, y'all. I'm Megan Gailey. I am a stand-up comedian and writer originally from Indianapolis, hence the y'all that I threw out there that everyone rolled their eyes to, I bet. Go Colts. Don't at me. I know they're bad. And the hill that I'm willing to die on today is that Daisy Duck has been pushed out of the Disney empire, and I think it's because she's a feminist hero with a purse and heels and a cute little booty tube boot.
All right, Grace, how about you go?
Hi, Grace Parra here. Hello, hello, hello. Hola, I'm Mexican. Classic LA multi-hyphenate over here. I'm a host. I'm a host, actress, writer, and snowflake. The dumbest hill that I will die on is I firmly believe that the fun song We Are Young is the worst recorded song in the history of humans, worse than the Macarena, which I would listen to for 4 hours a day, every day for the rest of my life, overhearing even the chorus of We Are Young, because it is that horrid.
You know, I think every single person has a song that they would want to torture in front of its best friend.
Yeah, that's my detention center song.
Yeah, yeah.
Too soon.
Too soon. Too soon. Too soon. Okay, Kieran, what do you got?
My name is Kieran Deal. I am from Boca Raton, Florida, by way of Britain, which yes. I despise. Hate that. I do hate that shitty country. I'm a comedian and a filmmaker, and I think a hill that I'm willing to die on is that the spritzer is underrated. Hmm. It's very underrated. It's a way to day drink and get less drunk and hydrate at the same time. It doesn't have to be trashy if you can own your truth.
Every single woman in this room went, and did a nod of affirmation as soon as Kieran stood up for the spritzer. So I think that you're not going to be very lonely on that spritzer hill.
All of our moms came through in us. We were like, you know what? It is refreshing.
It's sensible and fashion forward.
And you do need to hydrate. Hydration is important.
And you can drink more over a longer period of time and be less drunk. It does all the things.
My stamina's fucked these days, so I'm with you.
The
I love it.
Spritzer is
called a carpooling.
It's like session wine. You know, session beer, it's session session wine.
It's like a lettuce wrap.
That's great.
You're you're getting it, but not really.
I call it I really do love wine, the white woman inside of me. I call it part of my FUPA reduction program, because it's my own, that's my version of a diet, to make it more fun. You know what I mean? It's to stop drinking, because beer and wine bloats you. So it's FUPA reduction.
It does?
Oh, no, my God. No. Go back to Indiana, Megan. It's fine. It's fine. It's just calories.
All right. We're going to take a quick break. When we're back, deep dive. Hysteria is sponsored by ZipRecruiter. Hey, Blair.
Hey.
Have you ever tried to hire anybody?
I've tried.
It's hard, right?
It's difficult.
It's hard because I think it's harder than dating, because when you're if you're using an app to date.
It's like instant marriage.
Yeah, right. Because if you're using an app to date, you can just go out with somebody once, and then if it doesn't work, just not hang out with them again.
Block their number.
Right.
Yeah.
Block their number. And
see them on the subway six times for no reason.
Yeah, and see them on the subway six times for no reason and pretend you've never met them. Pretend that you're reading a book. Pretend you're not wearing your glasses. That's the old reliable. But when you're hiring somebody, you actually have to keep them around and you have to pay them. So the stakes are pretty high. And it's really important that if you're looking to hire, you find qualified candidates. And the place to find those people is ZipRecruiter.com/hysteria.
ZipRecruiter sends your job to over 100 of the web's leading job boards, but they don't stop there. Doesn't ZipRecruiter sound like a German Zeppelin? It sounds like a balloon that you could travel in Bavaria.
Bavaria?
Yeah.
Zeppelins?
Yeah. I just like old-timey
you're
words.
You're from the 1800s.
Yeah, I've been sent here.
Wisconsin.
I am from Wisconsin. We do churn our own butter there. With their powerful matching technology, ZipRecruiter scans thousands of resumes to find people with the right experience and invite them to apply to your job. As applications come in, ZipRecruiter analyzes each one and spotlights the top candidates so you never miss a great match. That's so cool that's
really
automated.
That's really convenient. It's like, hey, this person's a top dog.
Yeah, but they can just scan them and figure it out
with
from
an
there.
Algorithm.
That's so great.
Amazing.
ZipRecruiter is so effective that 80% of employers who post on ZipRecruiter get a quality candidate through the site within the first day. That is very fast.
One day. That's wild.
That's so fast.
That's so much. That's so many headaches. That's so much time that you're saving all through ZipRecruiter.
Wow.
The ZipRecruiter. Zip is because it's fast.
I think that's probably it. With results like that, it's no wonder that ZipRecruiter is the highest rated hiring site in America. Well, I mean, it sounds like it's pretty amazing.
Well, it could have been ZipRecruiter because it was a jeans company before and they didn't want to pay for a new domain name.
It could be. And right now, my listeners can try ZipRecruiter for free at this exclusive web address, ZipRecruiter.com/hysteria. That's ZipRecruiter.com/HYSTERIA. ZipRecruiter.com/hysteria. And we're back. So, you know, one of the things that I've noticed is that the Trump administration uses, that has a lot of women that are prominently speaking out for it. Kellyanne Conway was the first female manager of a successful presidential campaign. Sarah Huckabee Sanders, only the third ever female White House press secretary. Kirstjen Nielsen, second woman to be appointed the Secretary of Homeland Security. Ivanka Trump, probably idling in the corner of the White House like a trapped Roomba at this moment, but at least she's got a fancy title. Hope Hicks, you guys remember?
Hope.
It's been a minute.
No. Yeah. Is she in Sports Illustrated?
Yeah. Hope Hicks. Feels like it's been 1,000 years. She ran the White House press shop, managed to avoid such male Trump world gaffes as attempting to interfere with witnesses while being on house arrest or saying womp womp in response to a story of a girl with Down syndrome being separated from her mother at the border.
Cool
Those
times.
Two things. Male Trump acolyte. Mistakes. So the women in the Trump's orbit's main achievements seem to be not screaming racial slurs at a CNN satellite truck, but Trump boosters in the media consistently point to these women as examples of female achievement, and then they try to use any critique of them by feminists and progressives as some kind of evidence of hypocrisy. Here's my thing. So these women are running interference for an awful administration. And it seems like every time Donald Trump does something awful, that they're pushed into the spotlight, that they're kind of the ones that have to be the shield. I wanted to talk to you first, Grace, about how you've noticed women in Trump world breaking kind of the glass ceiling of cruelty, and if you think that's something we're celebrating.
Okay, well, a couple things. So first of all, I think you mentioned female achievement earlier. I think there's a difference between female achievement and feminist achievement. One of these is progressive and valuable. The other one is just a thing that a human with labia does. So as we continue on this conversation, it's important to remember that just because somebody is a woman does not mean that we need to value their every action. And I really think we got to get into that as women, too. There's a number of ways that parlays itself, not just as women, but when we start to talk about the intersectionality question, women coming from different racial backgrounds and sexual backgrounds. But, yeah, the question of the kind of glass ceiling, I don't know, maybe I am just risk averse and don't like the idea of the mess that comes with shattered glass, but I'm starting to think that shattering these glass ceilings is a little bit overrated.
It seems like we're sort of shattering the bottom of something.
Yeah.
Like we're in a glass bottom boat and here's Kirstjen Nielsen with a hammer like, woohoo! And we're like, no.
No.
We need to ride around in that.
Yeah.
Why are you shattering that?
Yeah.
Leave that. Kieran, do you think that there's a problem in different communities that find themselves underrepresented, that they feel like they need to celebrate when finally somebody in the community becomes public-facing or achieves something for better or for worse?
Yeah, I mean, that's kind of a thing, I think, a long time. Like, I'm an Indian person. You guys can all tell because my face, your eyes. But
I'm colorblind.
But it's like, you know, I know, like, when Bobby Jindal got into office or, like, Nikki Haley got into office, like, Nikki Haley, she's Sikh. I'm a Sikh person. Do you know what I mean? But it's just like, I categorically don't agree with her politics, but I know that for at least for some time, I felt like among people I knew, before there was a ton of representation, it's almost like what you say behind closed doors or in your own community is like, you can talk shit or you can say whatever you want to say.
Yeah.
And then it's like, but to the public, mm-hmm. it's like, United Front, mm-hmm. there's only two of us. Somebody did something, you know what yeah. I mean? And it's, but that the part of this is about diversification of individuals, because like, you can be Indian and also an asshole. You know what I mean? Like these two things, you can be a woman and also terrible.
One of the things that I also noticed when it comes to like Trump stuff, I had a really nice dad, and I have a brother too, and they're both super great. And I think part of the reason why I go through my life so disappointed so often is because the men that I grew up with were very good.
Yeah.
And then I
yeah.
went into the world and they're just not.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Not. And within the Trump world, one thing I've kind of notice is Donald Trump tries to pretend that making women do the dirty work is the same thing as promoting women.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And it's not the same thing as promoting women. Like Kirstjen Nielsen seems like a terrible person.
Yeah.
The Secretary of Homeland Security seems like a terrible person. But she's the one that's getting, you know, recently was getting shouted out of a Mexican restaurant. I've never seen video of Jeff Sessions getting shouted out of a Mexican restaurant, although I bet that green salsa is just too hot.
Right. He doesn't go to Mexican restaurants.
No, definitely.
Yeah. One time when I was working at Merrill Lynch, one of my duties was ordering lunch for the office. It was great. And one time a man came up to my desk and was like, are you going to order any more of those wrap things? And I was like, burritos?
Oh, wow.
God.
Oh, yes. Oh, boy.
Yes. I bet Jeff rap Sessions things. Is a rap things guy.
For sure.
I mean, that's the thing. Like, these women are the ones that get the heat in a way that's deserved, but they're the ones that are thrust into the spotlight.
He tends to he's reached a point where he just kind of like subs them out too. Because you're hearing these stories about Huckabee Sanders being like, I don't want to take the heat for the stuff that's going on because I don't know if I don't agree. But she's just been like, please don't put me in front of these people, even though it's my job and they're being mean to me. Mm-hmm. And so then he's like, all right, get that other blonde bitch in here. You know, like he's just like, all right, who do we have on Kellyanne somewhere cleaning up a fire? Like he just has like a Rolodex of like, give me another woman, give me another woman, in a way that you're like, does he just like watching them get yelled at by people on his behalf?
Mm-hmm. It is interesting how much armchair psychology Donald Trump invites.
Oh, yeah.
Because he's so simple, but so
yeah, do we
strange.
Give him, too much credit sometimes?
I don't
like,
know.
He's meticulous.
You know, I was kind of going to say that, too. Like, I think he actually just puts kind of anybody in the line of fire.
Yeah.
I mean, definitely, I think it's more painful for us as women because, at least from my perspective, I would love to be actively championing women in politics right now. And we're able to do that, obviously, with a number of progressive candidates and progressive people.
Par 2020.
But Jesus, nobody wants that. But I think he, like, to go back to the armchair psychology thing, I think that's just what he kind of does. And there's a lot of women who are willing to take the sword for him.
Yeah.
So maybe that's a question we have to ask ourselves, too, and ask the women who are getting involved in this administration. Why is it that you are allowing yourself to be taken advantage of like that?
What's the end game?
What's the end game? Great question. Yeah.
And what is, and the objective of the individual. It's like, because if your goal as an individual is power,
mm-hmm.
do you know what I mean? Is to rise as quickly as possible and to get as visible as possible, as mm-hmm. quickly as possible. Like, what are you willing to compromise?
Mm-hmm.
Are you willing to compromise a sense of morality, a sense of, you know, like the thing that I find fascinating is when people choose to champion things they don't believe
mm-hmm.
in service of like, you know, in service of their own, you know,
their own ambition,
ambition.
Yeah.
That's like, I mean, I imagine everyone has a conscience. And so I'm like, gosh, that how do you sit with that? How do you reconcile that?
We also don't know if these are jobs that are heavily coveted by anyone else. Like
exactly.
may be the people like,
exactly.
All right, I'll do it.
There are people coveting those jobs, though. Those people are going on Fox News and saying insane things because Fox News is a long audition tape to be a member of the administration.
I think with this batch of gals, they do this in sports a lot. Someone will have a record and they'll just put an asterisk like, yeah, Barry Bonds broke the record, but we don't really believe. We don't really like him. And it's like, okay, yeah, Kellyanne Conway, you did this, but we're just going to put a little note there to be like, we didn't really like her while she was doing it. So it happened, but like, shh.
Yeah, I find that a lot of times feminists and women who don't call themselves feminists but call themselves other things that are kind of cousins of feminism, I think that they sometimes take the bait when we're pushed into a corner by people who are bad faith actors trying to get us to admit that we're hypocritical. Mm-hmm. Because I think that it should be totally fine for women to say, this woman is an asshole. This woman lies all the time. Melania Trump, perhaps America's worst lady. These women are bad. It's not sexist to critique a woman. It's sexist to critique somebody because she's a woman. It's sexist to not critique somebody because they're a woman. But it's not sexist to lob serious critique at a woman. And I'm kind of tired of people who I usually find myself agreeing with backing down. I was thinking today that, you know, Sam B got in trouble for using the word cunt. And, you know, and I'm not calling anybody specific a cunt. But Why does that word even exist if we can't use it right now on some of the things that are happening right now and some of the people that are out there in the world right now?
Yeah.
The British, like my whole family is from England, so, oh, God, we use it very liberally around the dinner table. I mean, that's just what, oh, cunt something.
You know, I think Jim Jefferies made that point, too. He was like, I've been using the word cunt on my late night show for years.
His stand-up was just like, he'd be like, and this cunt, that cunt. You know, it's like,
he gets licensed to do that, and Sam B wasn't given that. And now she's being heavily policed on TBS, evidently.
I mean, do you think that given kind of the cushion of the amount of time that's passed between when everybody freaked out about it and she apologized and now, do you think that the original reaction to her saying that was correct, or do you think it was overblown?
It's tough as someone who says cunt all the time. I've written it in professional emails before. I think the timing on it was, there were factors around it that it's like, it's hard to just take, like, was it bad? Was it good? And it's like, there were factors around it. I also don't like that she apologized, because it's like, listen, if we're going to do this, we're going to do it.
Yeah.
And we have to be ready for X, Y, Z. And then it sort of felt like, oh, now they're all mad at me. And it's like, yeah, they're going to be, they don't watch the show, girl. Yeah. You know, like they're not tuning in. You made people mad that were already mad. And in that way, I wish she hadn't back down to it, but I understand that there's network pressure and all these things that people are forced to do, but I wish that that conversation had happened before they decided to say it or not say it.
Mm-hmm. Here's what I think. I hate the fact that the president of the free world is weighing in on what a cable news satirist is saying on a cable network. That's a waste of our administration's time. And that's a real, it is so disheartening. And it's not the first time that's happened, but it is one of the most recent cases that is just so, it's awful.
I mean, and Grace, don't you find it kind of rich that this administration is guilty of such atrocities? It's like, I know that you were bothered. You were saying before we were recording that you were really, you know, upset about what was happening at the border. Like, what do you feel about the disconnect between, you know, moral policing of the word cunt and the atrocity of separating families?
I don't know how you can have a platform like our president does to be able to fix some of the atrocities that are happening in our country. Actually, to just prevent them from happening, which is the case with the separation of children and families at the border, and still find time to tweet about Samantha Bee. I cannot for the life of me comprehend those two things. But what it shows to me is just a straight up lack of empathy and a direct path to narcissism that we're seeing. Somebody who is so wrapped up in their own self-image and in the own image of their family that they are willing to put aside the actual urgent needs of people in our country to care about something as pithy as the use of the word cunt on their daughter.
No one's ever apologized for calling me a cunt. And I think that's where some of my bitterness comes too.
Sure.
There was a guy in a stairwell in college, and it's like, I wasn't even being a feckless cunt. I was just trying to go to my room without getting fingered. And it's like, apologize to me.
That's true. The people that always act the most upset about the word cunt are the ones that are the most offensive in the way that they behave.
And are being cunts.
Yeah. Yeah.
The cuntiest of them, of the cuntiest of the people.
Wow, I feel like there's a proverb here. whoever smelt it, dealt it thing, but with calling somebody a cunt.
Whoever punts it, cunts it. Maybe vice versa.
We'll workshop that one. I mean, I don't know. I just was thinking about like branding and symbolism and how you know, Trump is upset about people kneeling and performing a symbol, mm-hmm. and Trump is upset about people or people not respecting the flag, or people using the wrong word. And I just can't get upset when there's things that are so much more offensive to me. Grace, you mentioned the distraction of using a word like cunt.
Yeah.
Directed at a person who's representing an atrocious agenda. Mm-hmm. I almost think that looking back on, that was my first reaction to the Sam B thing too, but looking back on it, I almost think that maybe we shouldn't apologize for cunt anymore.
No.
I almost feel like the next time that happens, I think we should be like, so
what? I mean, I'm with Megan. I don't think she should have apologized to begin with. And I think that you want to be working with a network and a platform that supports you and that supports your voice. And if that's the, by the way, we forget about the fact that she didn't just improv that word when she went on camera.
Approved.
It was approved. So I'm glad that like the network stood behind her, but also fucking stand behind your talent. Stand behind them and make sure that people know that you support the person who you're putting on television.
Yeah, speaking of approved in advance, and this might feel like a million years ago to listeners by the time they're actually hearing this in a week, but recently Melania Trump wore a jacket that said, I believe, I don't care.
I don't really
care.
I don't really care, do you?
Do you?
Mm-hmm.
It was a Zara jacket.
Which she doesn't shop at Zara. She doesn't. That's where we shop. That's not for her. No, that's a lie. That's lies, lies, lies. She's going to be in Laura Ashley next week? No.
It was also like 106 degrees at the border. What is she doing wearing a jacket?
She was at the border visiting.
There's air conditioning in the plane. No, I stand by that.
That's true.
Sometimes it's cold. Very cold in the plane.
Know,
and then you have to
is.
Bring extra apparel. They do.
She didn't even know. They were like, grab a jacket, Melania. And she goes, okay. Yeah. You know I don't speak English.
This was totally incidental.
Well, she couldn't.
No fashion plan.
She couldn't read it. It was on her back. And so she put it on the Melania way. But you know what was crazy to me, in addition to the fact that she was visiting children separating from their families at the border by a Trump policy. Mm-hmm. She was wearing a jacket about not caring. She was using the sleeves of it, which was eerie, because Melania never uses the sleeves. She always just perches it on her shoulder.
You're right.
In that rich lady way, where it's like, I won't have to use my arms.
A way that no one else does.
I've tried to do it, and I feel so awkward doing it, but I do try. I do try.
Oh, I've tried at restaurants, and my friends have been like, who do you think you are? Put your damn sleeves on.
That's what I'm doing from now on exclusively. I'm literally going to do it right now.
It also defeats the purpose of the jacket, too, which is just, of course, she's never had to worry about that.
It's more like a cape.
It is more like a cape, right.
Her spokeswoman said, stop. There was no, it was a, there's nothing, don't read into it. Mm-hmm. And then Trump tweeted like, actually, no, she did it on purpose. And it's like, you guys got to sync up. Because spokeswoman is lying.
Can I also just say, it angers me so much that I have to give two shits about what Melania Trump does or wears or pretends to do. I hate that. That is one of the things that is most irksome about this, about Trump being elected into office, is that we have to care about this woman and this family. And the reality is that I don't care, but they are relevant and they are people whose every action we analyze. And I don't know if you guys feel frustrated by it too, but it's the very core of it that irks me.
Wow. Grace, you're not being very best right now.
I'm not.
But, you know, I don't think she wanted to be part of this either.
That's
fair. I think
fair.
That she had thought that she, you know, I think that she never thought that she'd be the first lady. And now she is. And she, I wonder if, is Be Best in the same font as the jacket? It looks like it might be in the same font as the jacket. Maybe she just likes the font.
We got to get Dan Brown to like break it down. And it's like, is this her being like, I have to really leave, do care.
Yes.
Must be out of here. Like, it's. Because we're like looking, I don't like when people also are like, don't focus on the jacket. There's obviously this horrible, like, human rights violation. It's like, listen, I have a lot of hate and it can go to a lot of different places. Like, I can be mad about her jacket and furious to the point of tears and heartbroken about the children. I'm capable, and then also still mad at somebody from elementary school. Mm-hmm. I have lots of ranges of things I can be angry about, and I am going to be mad about the jacket because I think it was intentional.
In a way, the jacket is just kind of like, it's the left's version of the cunt word, though. Do you know what I mean? It's like you said, the bigger issue is those children. Mm-hmm. But if you're going to the border and like all of the focus is on, it strikes me as a little bit of, honestly, tacticians. Mm-hmm. Do you know what I mean? Mm-hmm. If you're going to a border and you're going to detention centers and she's going for the first time and she tweeted out against it and said that she was sad about families being separated, and then you wear this jacket, mm-hmm. now that's such an easy, it's such an easy little soundbite. It's like, we've already talked about it for 2 minutes. Do you mm-hmm. know what I mean? It's like, it's such an easy thing to kind of grasp onto. And what does that take attention off of?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. It's cunt.
It's liberal cunt.
It's the cunt
of what she could have said.
I think yes. that's a really, really brilliant point. I think that we are very quick to...
Thank you. Thank you so much.
Guys, I'll be leaving now. Fight.
Thank you so much.
We were supposed to fight. The whole purpose of this
was
bitches be fighting.
Yeah.
And we're not fighting.
Cunts be cursing.
Well, give me another glass of rosé. I'll find something.
Well, we need to take a break. And when we come back, I'll have what she's having. And we're back with the LA crew on a segment called I'll Have What She's Having. This is where the women that are part of Hysteria recommend things that women have made, things that women have done, or women that they're very excited about. It doesn't need to be recent, just something a woman did that's cool and exciting. Karen, let's start with you.
Yeah, I just want to plug this filmmaker named Andrea Arnold. Her first short film won an Oscar that she ever made. She was a dancer, and then her first short film was called Wasp. You can find it on YouTube. It's 17 minutes long. She went on to do a film called Fish Tank and then American Honey. Fish Tank had Michael Fassbender in it and kind of started his career, but Wasp is just such an excellent... It's just such an excellent... Like, there's the internalization and the externalization of, like, her, you know... You see how challenging it can be as a woman to, like, face a series of choices when you're very, very young, but it's done without ever being as inarticulate as I was about those topics in this plug for it. It's really fantastic.
Grace?
I'm going to be super selfish and plug two. The first is because I saw a stand-up show recently, a woman named Hannah Gadsby. The absolute best stand-up show I've seen, the best hour I've ever seen from anybody. And her special's on Netflix now, so you can check her out. Her last name is Gadsby, Hannah Gadsby. It's transformative. It's awesome. And then second...
It's called Nanette.
It's called Nanette. I'm so sorry. Yes, it's called Nanette. Thank you. It's awesome. It's just really, really incredible. You guys got to watch it. I don't know why I emphasize guys. You guys got to watch it. All people watch it. But I would also like to throw my weight behind Cardi B's I Like It as the song of the summer.
Okay.
I fucking love it. I love that she features Bad Bunny and J Balvin, who are two just Latin reggaeton superstars who are unbelievable. And song of the summer.
You've been lobbying for this for quite some time.
I have been.
I'm glad that you're finally having a platform to really tell everybody that this is the song of the summer.
I just don't want Cardi B out.
She needs some.
She's struggling. Yeah.
I mean, there's so many Cardis in her class. There's a Cardi S. There's a Cardi L.
Too many Cardis.
A Cardi Gan. Thank you. Kill yourself. Exactly.
I'm going to walk into the sea after this.
I'm going to be right behind you. And Grace is going to be like, don't forget about Cardi.
Megan, what do you have?
I co-signed Nanette hard. Yes, that was going to be one. And then I saw this movie the other night. This is also something that needs no help making money. Incredibles 2.
Oh, yeah.
Is truly feminist. I promise. I thought I was crazy because, and then I was Googling and I was like, okay, there's like legitimate articles. The female voices in it are really, really incredible. And I don't mean like character voices. I mean the plot lines. Violet is going through, you know, trouble with boys, but then also coming of age as a superhero. And the star of it, Holly Hunter, who plays Elastigirl, is it's just, it kind of felt like a feminist Black Panther. Like, it was like, okay, cool. This is a movie about women being superheroes and men kind of being sad that they're left behind.
More importantly, Pixar needs your help.
I know.
So, Pixar and Cardi B could help each other, maybe.
I'm more saying it if you were, like, apprehensive or if your kids wanted to see it and you were like, no, it's really, as I went with a girlfriend and then my boyfriend and we were like, get out of here. We don't need you. Like, I felt empowered after it.
Oh, I love that.
That's great. It's great that studios have discovered women.
Women have money.
What? That's crazy. Usually we just have to ask our husbands very nicely. Yeah. Like Judy Jetson at the beginning of The Jetsons, when he offers some dollars and she takes the whole wallet. That's so me. So me. Except I don't have a husband or a robot butler. So my recommendation is, it's a little bit inside baseball, but I want to throw some shine on the artist who designed the art for Hysteria.
She is
an independent artist, animator, and activist who lives in LA. Her name's Faye Orlove, and she started a place called Junior High.
I've done a show there, and it's pink. That's inside. Hers. Oh, she's great.
She's great, and her illustrations kind of remind me when I was a kid. I had these like fashion plates. Did you have those?
So
it sort of has that kind of like 80s vibe, but it's very feminist and very inclusive and very subversive and beautiful. And you can buy prints on her website, fayorlove.com, and you can visit Junior High here in Los Angeles. And she also has other projects that she's working on, and she's just really amazing. She's partnered with some incredible artists. She's partnered with Mitski, who I am such a stand for, and Waxahachie she's partnered with as well. She's wonderful. And if you're into art illustration at all, you should check Faye's work out. Okay, ladies, that is all the time that we have for this first episode of Hysteria LA Edition. We'll catch you later, and have a great week.
Bye.
I need to sign off. Bye, bye, bye.
1, 2, 3, Hysteria.
Let's not ever do that.
And this was Hysteria. Yeah. I'm Erin Ryan, and this was Hysteria. All right, bye, guys.